Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
We gave Donald Trump a massive victory, and so when I talk to President Trump on the phone and or in person, he always asks me how Arizona's doing. He loves this state.
What we know is that they're acting in accordance with direction from higher ups in their agency. And I think we're making it clear the kind of activity that we are not okay with. Obviously, they can continue the activity they're doing, but I think it's really harmful.
I'm shocked Katie Hobbs vetoed it. Literally, with my modifications, it just prohibited the government of the People's Republic of China from owning property in Arizona. What is the rational reason anybody would oppose that?
The investments that would need to be made, in particular the add-on pollution controls and the additional expenses to essentially, you know, bring the plant up to a place where it can be reliable for longer-term operations, we know that would be significant.
Obviously, in Arizona, we face it more intensely than anywhere else in the country, but extreme heat is hitting all different parts of the country, and we need to have a response plan to deal with this.
And joining me to talk about a proposal to do away with the state income tax, a potential vote to override a gubernatorial veto, and more are Daniel Scarpinato with Winged Victory Agency. Daniel, good morning.
Good morning. Great to see you.
Great to see you as well. And former state lawmaker Aaron Lieberman. Aaron, good morning to you.
Great to be back here.
So let's start, Daniel, with Andy Biggs. He held a rally last weekend where he talked about, among other things, doing away with the state income tax. This is something that your former boss, Governor Doug Ducey, also, he talked about lowering it, not necessarily getting away with it, doing away with it altogether. But I'm curious what you make of this idea of just saying, okay, no more income tax.
Well, I it's a noble goal and one I philosophically agree with. And as you noted, Governor Ducey, what Governor Ducey had talked about was getting the income tax as close to zero as possible. We took it. We actually lowered every bracket down to a 2.5% flat tax, lowest flat tax in the country. Despite that, actually, the budget, the spending in our state budget has grown by 40% since he's left office. So we're able to do that and have resources to invest in things. You know, I think that the challenge here is there's basically kind of three legs to the stool in Arizona when it comes to funding our budget: income tax, property tax, and sales tax. And so can we eliminate it? I think that might be tough. Can and should we continue to chip away at it? Yes, because you have other states. Jared Polis, the Democratic governor of Colorado, recently said he wanted to lower their income tax. Nevada has no income tax. Texas has no income tax. They have other sources of revenue, like gaming and other issues, oil and gas in Texas. So I think that this would be tough to do, but I think the goal of chipping away at it as you have resources to do it is going to grow the economy and overall be good for the state, because we're in a dynamic atmosphere where other states are constantly looking at how to lower and improve their tax code.
Aaron, let me ask you about one of the things Daniel just said in terms of having the resources to do it. Because as you know, having served in the legislature, it is extremely difficult to raise taxes. Finding other sources of revenue is nearly impossible in Arizona. So in terms of either doing away with the income tax or reducing it, obviously there's a competitiveness issue. Daniel mentioned Nevada doesn't have one. Texas, Florida doesn't have one. So there's that kind of argument, but there's also the need to fund state services.
Look, the only problem with those zero tax states is you have to go live there if you want to claim that tax rate. Like, we're playing a winning hand. People are moving here. People love Arizona at our current tax rate. I think this would be a disaster. We're basically a broke state. Look at the budget right now. Like, we're really struggling to meet our basic needs. We don't have things that other states have. We don't have the class size cap that Florida has that makes their public schools the envy of the nation. We don't have any real investments in affordable housing. The things that people care about, the reason we don't have those is because we have so little revenue coming into the state. This would be an absolute disaster. To Daniel's point, you got to get it from somewhere. And all that's going to happen is you'll have to increase property or sales tax. It usually ends up with property taxes going up because that's the easiest way to kind of backdoor it in there. I'll say, when I moved back home to Arizona after being gone for a while, our first property tax payment, my wife was, oh, we got to pay this. I thought it was a quarterly payment and was shocked when it was the whole year. I've lived in places where you're paying $25,000 just to, you know, to have your kind of modest house. I think an income tax is actually a much better way to get that. And it doesn't put elderly people on a fixed income and everything else having to wonder if they can keep their house. So this would be a disaster. But I want to reinforce I'm all for Andy Biggs winning his Republican primary. I think this would be a great issue to have in a general election for Governor Katie Hobbs to win on.
Well, so a couple things. One is that I agree. I think having the low property tax is part of why we've been so attractive for retirees. One of the challenges of doing this, of eliminating the income tax, is we've now done a number of things that are voter protected, like you can't tax services. There's a lot of things that are kind of off the table, mm-hmm. so it's hard to generate other pieces of revenue. I would say, though, to push back on what Mr. Lieberman said, is there's no downside to advocating for lower taxes. And I think Democrats sometimes get caught in this thing of thinking, oh, you know, if he's out there talking about lowering taxes, it's going to be a great issue for Katie Hobbs. I think it's a great issue for Republicans. So I think, the goal and kind of the setting the vision of lowering the tax rate, keeping taxes low, finding ways to continually reform it is something that Arizonans support.
Well, so we have to talk about the political aspect of this, right? He said it at a political rally sponsored by Turning Point USA. He, of course, is in a competitive gubernatorial primary here coming up next year. How does this does this in any way affect the outcome? I mean, you would expect someone like Karen Taylor Robeson to also be in favor of, if not getting a doing away with the income tax, of at least lowering taxes broadly. So, like, is this sort of an opening salvo? Like, how do you see this playing in the primary?
Well, it's interesting because going back to 2014 and Governor Ducey, you know, as we talked about, had a kind of a very measured way, in my opinion, of talking about lowering the income tax. Heads exploded when he said that. And actually in that primary, Scott Smith and some other candidates were like, you can't do that. You can't lower the income tax. You're going to blow up the budget. It was a big issue, and I think it helped him win the primary and general. What has changed is that tax policy is no longer a motivating issue for Republican primary voters. It's not really. I actually think if you went to a Republican meeting and said, let's raise taxes to build the wall, you'd have people out of their chairs applauding.
Raising taxes to build the wall.
So I'm not advocating for that.
That's because so few of those Republican base members pay a lot in taxes. No, I mean, that's the reality of the situation.
It's because our coalition has changed.
Exactly.
It's more working class. And so whereas 10, 15 years ago, the Steve Forbes flat tax, lowering taxes, all things I believe in as a free market conservative, those aren't, I think, in a Republican primary, issues that are going to light up a room anymore.
Aaron, let me take you back to your days in the State House.
Yep.
Sorry if that is not a pleasant place for you to be. Some of your former colleagues are going to, in the Senate anyway, are going to be put up on the board if they want to override a gubernatorial veto. This is not something that happens frequently. The governor this week vetoed a bill that basically would have barred people associated with the Chinese government from owning property in Arizona. She said it wouldn't really do that much. And Senate President Warren Peterson says, we're going to put this up on the board. We're going to let people vote to override it. Of course, it needs a 2/3 vote. Not a lot of Democrats voted for this bill when it went through the first time. Do you see a lot of Democrats voting to override a governor of their party?
This is going to be a tough one. I don't think it had any Democratic support initially, which honestly is a little bit of a surprise. I think there was an amendment on it. It doesn't look great on its face is really the only thing I can say. It's like it's not like it's any Chinese landholder. It's literally banning the government of China from owning land in Arizona. I think there's been a lot of good stuff the governor has done around the Saudi Arabian owners of the farms and kind of pushing back on some of this stuff. This feels like there maybe was some inside baseball reason to veto it. It'll be very interesting to see if anyone comes back. The toughest thing when you're down there is going up on the board with that vote. that you know could be 20,000 pieces of mail in your district, especially when it's not going to matter. They're not – it'd be incredibly unlikely that they get to enough to override the veto. So it's you're basically asking people to go vote for something that's not going to happen. That's a tough spot to put people in.
So does this then become – like does this become a potential campaign issue if Democrats vote against this? Are we going to be seeing mailers about this?
You know, it's an interesting question. I'm of the opinion that one of the things that really hurt our swing district candidates last time was some of the immigration votes where they didn't side with Republicans on some of those things. You've seen a big shift federally. I mean, Ruben Gallego is leading the train on secure borders and all of these things. Most of the Democrats in Congress, including our then, you know, Senator Sinema, wasn't a Democrat at the time, but were much more for secure borders. We haven't seen that in the core Democrats in the state house. And a lot of people like my friend Christine Marsh and others really, you know, it was a big issue. This is like, did anyone think the biggest issue facing Arizona is the ownership of China? Like it seems a little more obscure than that, but it's on its face. It doesn't smell very good.
Daniel, do you see a lot of Democrats going against the governor of their party in an override vote?
No. The last time we had an override was, I think, 1982. It was over redistricting. It actually happens frequently in other states. Some have a simple majority. But for whatever reason, it has been, and I will say there were several times when I was chief of staff where I had to physically go down and prevent veto overrides from happening.
We won't ask you how you did
throw
that.
My body in front of the train. But on this one, it is a bit inconceivable to me of this really does go in the tamale bill category of boneheaded vetoes.
Didn't she sign the tamale bill ultimately?
The next year she did.
A political disaster. And this maybe isn't at that level in the public consciousness yet, but it has gotten a lot of attention. There are some real threats to whether it's Palo Verde or our military installations, our water supplies. So I don't really understand. I didn't really understand their rationale. I think the original bill was a better bill, and it kind of got complicated and watered down. Yet, I think they got to think through what fights to pick, and this doesn't seem like a distraction that was needed.
Aaron, you talked about the state of the state budget just a few moments ago. Let's talk about the state of the Arizona Democratic Party budget, which its treasurer says is not fantastic, says it's going to run out of money or could run out of money by the end of the year. There also seems to be a growing effort to oust the new chairman who just took office earlier this year. There's a big meeting coming up this weekend. What is going on here?
I don't speak for all Democrats, but I think Daniel and I sometimes have a contest of like which state party is more screwed up. And we're winning right now at this particular moment. The Democrats are pulling it home. But I think this is a very confusing situation. I do have some friends who are state committee members. I think the previous election where the current chair got elected, it really felt like people were being kind of jammed and not told everything. And it was not necessarily a referendum on the previous chair, who I think many people, she was a record fundraiser, actually did a really good job. A little bit hard because of the election results. We had this red wave. And so, mm-hmm. you know, everyone has to deal with that. But it was just an unusual dynamic that happened there. I think now there's this issue of does the chairman really – does he know how to lead and get to do all of the procedural pieces you need to run a state Democratic Party? I don't actually know on this. I suspect, you know, in the end of the day that there's some Latin term, the thing speaks for itself. Like if you're running out of money and can't bring in more money, then like something's got to change. And I would guess that there will be a change this weekend.
It's a change in leadership?
Yeah. It's a super unfortunate situation that got us to this point. I think the only good news is that it's not like, you know, 2 months before an election when everything has to really come together. Like this is the time to have these kind of inter-family squabbles and have it out and hopefully get it resolved. From our perspective, it's actually unbelievable. In the recent poll, the statewide elected leaders are way more popular than the generic kind of Democratic Party. Like
yeah.
we're playing a winning hand with statewide elected leaders who are doing fantastic and are broadly popular. We need to somehow get our state party organized and supporting those statewide electeds to keep this, you know, the music going.
Daniel, when there's all the sort of the back and forth and the problems going on with the state Republican Party, it's in some ways similar to what's going on now with the state Democratic Party, in some ways very different. But like, how much does all of that impact elections? Like if the state Democratic Party is in a state of turmoil right now, what does that mean for elections coming up in, you know, 17, 18 months?
It's a problem. And it's a obviously, Republicans have been dealing with some of these issues for at least 20 years in Arizona. It does feel like it's a new dynamic on the Democratic side. I think they're going to see more of this because the populist movement is occurring in both parties. You see it with AOC and Bernie Sanders, kind of stars of the show. And so this, I think, is kind of a byproduct of that. The reason I think it's a bigger problem for Democrats is that they've actually done a much more effective job of utilizing existing state laws, loopholes, and the state party. For instance, you can, under Arizona law, raise unlimited amounts of corporate and individual dollars into the state party. And if you look at Katie Hobbs' last two campaigns for Secretary of State and Governor, her entire campaign was through the state party. You avoid all the fundraising limitations. So every ad you saw from Katie Hobbs was paid for by the Arizona Democratic Party, authorized by Katie Hobbs. Republicans haven't done that. We haven't mastered that. So if they can't figure this out, I actually think it is a big impediment for them being as effective as they've been, to their credit, on these statewide races.
Do you think that Robert Branscombe survives this?
I don't know enough about their inner dynamics, but the truth is, you know, you can have Ruben Gallego and Mark Kelly and Katie Hobbs and everybody coming out. I don't know that the rank and file progressive Democrat cares what they think. And so, again, this is something you've seen from the McCain era on the Republican Party, and I think it's happening on the Democrat. They're viewed as the elites, and I don't think that the rank and file activists, I actually think it sometimes backfires when they get involved in these fights.
That kind of raises the question, though, that if the people who are your party's elected leaders are seen as the elites, like, what's the point?
Daniel hit on a really important thing, which is that coordination with the state party that has been very effective. I think the reality is you've seen a lot of it in, like, independent expenditure spending on the other side. And that's probably where this would go if there was, like, if it couldn't happen this way. It feels slightly less good to write a big check to some sort of anonymously named thing, but it's going to do the same thing. So it just makes it more complicated in how it will play out. This is a thing, to Daniel's point, that both parties really struggle with. The people who are most active are not representative of the broadest swath of even the Democrats or the Republicans, right? They're the hardcore, you know, true believers. And sometimes as a group, or at least by a slight majority of that group, they have kind of a different perspective, certainly than what you need to win statewide in Arizona. And I mean, that's what we see that in the poll numbers right now.
Let me ask you, Aaron, about some of those poll numbers. There's a Noble poll this week that came out that, to your point that you made earlier about the favorability ratings of some Democratic politicians, Mark Kelly plus 15, Ruben Gallego plus 19, Katie Hobbs plus 13. Most Democrats are not getting numbers anywhere near that.
That's the thing. I mean, in particular, I love to point this out for Governor Hobbs, because I think she's unfairly criticized all the time. And, you know, is she going to get reelected? I think most Arizonans see her as a centrist. That's kind of how she's governed. That's where she's been on things. I think her numbers kind of prove that out, that she's kind of running right down the middle. And there really is – we have never seen a path to winning statewide without doing that. It's, you know, Kyrsten Sinema wrote the playbook. Mark Kelly followed it. You know, same with Senator Gallego. Katie Hobbs put her kind of state-based spin on it. And it's really to focus on, like, the issues that most people care about and not try to get drawn into the, you know, extremes. That's the winning hand to win statewide.
What do you make of the fact, Daniel, that these three particular individual Democrats, are their favorability ratings are so much higher than Democrats as a whole?
Well, I have a different view. I actually think what the numbers in this poll and by the way, my slogan is the only poll I believe is ones that I pay for. So I don't know who paid for this. I don't know how it was conducted. But on its face, the real finding to me is that Governor Hobbs's support is incredibly soft. Most Arizonans couldn't pick her out of a lineup. We've seen this in previous polling. So there's very little meat on the bones. I would say that for Republicans, that is an opportunity to define her before she defines herself. But I would say if I'm her team, I would also see some advantages. Perhaps the less people know about her, the better.
Look, again, it's not like she's unknown. She's the governor of the state of Arizona. The state is booming. We have functionally zero unemployment. Like, things are going pretty well.
She's not very visible. I think the numbers show there were a lot of people with no opinion.
I saw her at the Holocaust Museum groundbreaking yesterday. I see her out there. It's a weird thing in what gets covered and not, and controversy leads. Everybody knows that. She's actually done a great job of staying out of the controversial stuff and just kind of trying to get the state to work. I think most people are happy if their, politicians aren't making headlines all the time, but are just doing a good job. And in my perspective, that's what the governor's doing right now. And, we've seen affordable housing bills
like
get signed.
Like vetoing China bills.
It's a little confusing. I don't know enough of the details on that. But she signed more affordable housing bills than your, former boss did for sure. We've better funded the affordable housing
more expensive.
Trust fund. And, well, that's because of the runaway, tax cuts you guys pushed on everybody. But.
Well, okay. So let me ask you, obviously, in a year from now, President Trump is not on the ballot.
Yeah.
But if he's around, he's always not far from the ballot. Daniel, this same poll found that President Trump's approval rating is -5, but his favorability rating is basically flat. So, what does that mean?
Well, what it means is everybody wants to write President Trump's political obituary, and it ain't happening. I mean, despite all of the things that have occurred the last 4 or 5 months and throughout his political career— he's still pretty stable. I mean, we're not in George H.W. Bush times anymore where politicians have 80% approval ratings. I actually think that's pretty darn good if you're him to be at that number. To me, the big issue in 2026 when we talk about Governor Hobbs and some of these other races is not our, so the reason Republicans succeeded this last election was historic numbers among Hispanic men, great numbers among independents, a lot of voters who had never voted and people who vote very infrequently. The question for me is not, are these people going to vote for Democrats? I don't believe they will. The question is, are they going to vote? Are they going to come out and vote again? And that, I think, is a piece we don't know and will be critical for Republicans. They need those voters to come out and vote.
Trump, very briefly.
If Trump's not on the ballot, they won't be there. It'll be a good year for Democrats. Trump's going to rile up our independents and our Dems. It'll be just like 2018 when I got elected.
We'll pop the champagne and celebrate.
We'll celebrate on election night, Daniel. That's when we'll be excited.
The only polls that matter are the ones you pay for or the ones on election day.
Those
matter, too.
Exactly.
Right. Aaron Lieberman, Daniel Scarpinato, thanks so much to both of you. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.